Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. It's the 5 o'clock fire.
It is 5 o'clock. Congratulations. Hopefully you're off work. Luckily for you, old Dirty and the Dilf.
The big Dilf.
And Psycho T, a.k.a. T-Mill, have the latest. The latest is 5 o'clock fire is brought to you by Kirk Holmes and the Astros. They cannot stop the bleeding. They get swept today after taking a 1-0 lead in the first. The problems continue. The problems continue with hitting with runners in scoring position. They had plenty of opportunities like we've seen a lot this year. This team leads the league in hits, by the way. They had plenty of opportunities again today and could not plate any other runs. And there was plenty of traffic, even when Verlander was in, which is why he had to leave early. Plenty of traffic in this game. And then a kid who had never gotten a hit before, who was just called up, went deep and hit a 2-run homer to give the Cubs a 2-run lead. They win this game 3-1. The Astros are now 7-19. They have been swept for the fourth time out of seven series this year. Joe Espada, who was ejected, and it was the calmest ejection I've ever seen, almost appearing that Joe Espada requested to be ejected. That's almost what it looked like. Joe did speak on it. Joe said he got ejected because I didn't agree with the strike zone today. And why he chose that moment, Espada said, I just got tired of watching. That is from the manager, Joe Espada.
That's what you want from your manager, man. That's what you want to hear right there. Oh, no, I was just tired of watching. I wanted to hit that house.
I don't mind. You're tired of watching. I want to see you show me that you're tired of watching. I don't know, man. This is I would pose this to you two and the people. Is this rock bottom? Have we reached it?
I hope so. I can't take much more, dude.
Because, honest to God, Mexico City on the horizon could be. Is this as low as it gets? The ejection, the way it looked, getting swept here, losing the Verlander start where he gives up one run in his five innings plus. Is this rock bottom for the Astros?
Well, it's hard to think that they're at rock bottom April 25th, but It's difficult right now to think that they could dig any deeper. I know you can from a record perspective, obviously, but you've got are they still one of the teams that's worse than the Astros right now?
We talked to Tony yesterday. I said it can't get better. If they go down there and lose to the Rockies, they're going to struggle. And then he told us, well, they beat the Padres last night, so.
They won a game or two.
Let me
yeah,
check.
Man, look, I just...
They're up 10-9 right now on the Padres.
I just don't know. I don't know that it could get any worse.
If they win today, they will have the same amount of wins as the Astros. They will be 7-19.
7-19. So there can't be another team worse, right? I mean, there's got to be. In the standings, I need to look at the standings.
Oh, there are. The Chicago White Sox, they're sitting there with three.
Okay, so there is at least one or two teams that's worse than the Astros right now. So, yeah, look, I don't know that this – again, you can go lose in Mexico City back-to-back games, I suppose, and it would be even further – the hole would be even deeper. But it's never been more obvious to me that this team lacks leadership in a major, major way, and the manager that you hired doesn't have the ability to fill that void at the very least. It's very obvious to me right now that injuries aren't the problem. Like, getting guys back
aren't the sole issue.
It isn't going to fix the issues that you have going on. This is, as many times as we've said it, I know the early crowd don't want to buy into it, But there's zero doubt about it. This baseball team consistently does things that bad base. And it's not just one thing here or there. There's several in every single game. And it's in the field. It's at the plate. It's on the base pass. It's just, it's hard to think that they're going to snap their fingers and all of those things are going to be corrected. So I don't know how you can get any further in the hole.
Yeah, someone texted in and said, I think Mexico City might be the rock bottom and they may make huge changes after that. I don't know if that is the case. This is just getting bad. Like, it's just and now when you hear from guys like Mauricio Dubon, who said it's a slap in the face. If you'd have told me coming out of, after we broke camp, that we'd be playing like this, I probably would have called BS. And then the looks on their faces,
yeah,
of defeat, of we don't know what we're going to do next. Like, literally after this game on April 25th, the most experienced player you got looks like they just lost in the playoffs to end their season. Jose Altuve is sitting just motionless, just sitting, staring, and not going back into the clubhouse like you would do in a normal game. Is sitting there just staring out in Chicago over the railing as if like their season just ended. This is close to it. If they go out there and get swept, if they go and get swept in this two-game set against the Rockies, now it can't get worse than that.
It's not ideal.
At that point, it can't get worse than that. So, whew, we'll see what happens. They lose 3-1, 7-19, 7-19, 12 games under 500.
5 o'clock fire.
It's the Astros' worst start since 1969. And there is at least some good news. Clint, Framber Valdez will come off the injured list and start Sunday against the Rockies in Mexico City, Joe Espada said prior to the game. And that is big news. Blanco and Framber Valdez will start those games Saturday and Sunday. They get another day off tomorrow. They'll start those games Sunday. And that's, to me, why is it? Like, those are games you at least, at the very least split. This thing, what are they right now on this road trip?
1-5.
They only got one to get fit against the Nationals. Damn it. Right. 1-5. So they're going to finish under 500 on this trip. They are 1-5 on this trip. That's why it's important. Like, they got it at the very least split, this thing, especially with those pitchers. I don't know what his pitch count's going to be since the injury that we know of. He has only had a 40-pitch bullpen session, so we'll see how long Framber can go. But it's a tough thing because there's actually a little pressure on him. Like, they need you to perform, Framber. They need you to come back your first one, not ease into it, baby. They need you to perform. So this is the other scary part. Like, Blanco has been a lifesaver for this team. What happens if, as they say, water finds its level with him? Like, you know, what happens if he just becomes solid instead of great like he has been? That's because you can't expect him to just come out here and just pitch the way he has pitched to start this season. At some point, you feel like he's not – this isn't a Cy Young guy. At some point, you think it's going to drop back. So this is – but it's big to get Framber back at the very least, and hopefully Javier is coming soon and you can at least – have the injury thing completely out of the picture.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice to have your top three starters. Look, it's not – again, I'm still in a position where I think the Astros have a chance that they can claw back and make this thing at least interesting as the season rolls on here. Because I do believe that the Altuves of the world – he's 1-for-16, by the way, with runners in scoring position this year. I believe those kinds of stats are gonna flip at some point in time, and so I think they're I'm not completely out on them yet, and getting their top three starters back would be a big plus. It's not going to be the cure because that's not the problem, but it'll be a big plus.
Yeah. All right, that's where things land here. Framber back and off the IL. We'll see who gets sent down in the move to bring him back. But Framber will pitch on Sunday against the Rockies.
5 o'clock fire.
All right, the NFL draft is tonight. Coverage is rolling. This thing is about to kick off here in less than 2 hours. As we talked about it just now, Caleb Williams will go number one. We know at the very least he's going to go. Jaden Daniels will most likely go to the Washington Commanders at two. My question to you, Clint, you've been watching this. This is the position, and we know how quarterback needy teams get. And last year, seeing what C.J. Stroud did and how quickly that turnaround happened, teams want to look at it and try to get that franchise quarterback and find it.
Worst thing that ever happened to the rest of the league, rest of these rookies, is C.J. do what he did last year.
They don't see Bryce. They see C.J.
Oh, that's it, man. That's the bar, man. Hey, these owners, they're ignorant enough to go, yeah, that's what we want our guy to do. That's what we expect our guy to do. You go out there and play like C.J. Hey, man.
God bless, brother.
Look at Anthony Richardson
God bless
before
you,
he got
CJ.
Hurt. Yeah,
ooh, yeah. Yeah, it's just that bar is way too high for any rookie. I think to your point, I think Caleb goes one. I do think Jaden Daniels goes two.
How many quarterbacks in this one in the first round, you think? Last year was just
three. I think
three.
There's a chance six go in the first round.
Six? You think all of them, all of the ones they've talked about, six?
Possibly. Not likely, but possibly. I'm bullish on it because I think
you think six should.
I think Michael Penix should. I don't think Bo Nix would typically be a first round pick, but I mean they're talking about him. How many could go tonight overall? I think six could potentially go. Especially if you get a run of, they're talking about potentially four of the first five could be quarterbacks. Isn't that right? Who's got the fifth pick?
The Cardinals aren't going to pick.
They got four. That's what I said. Four of the first five.
Oh, of the fifth is the Chargers, isn't it?
Yep. So it would be four of the first six.
Yeah, Chargers. The Giants have six, though.
Gotcha.
They could.
But Minnesota's expected to possibly jump up.
Minnesota,
into
Denver, the ones you want to keep an eye on. And it's been quiet with the Raiders, but you know they're sitting over there with Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. So that
the interesting thing to watch here
I've
for me.
I've seen Penix going to the Raiders.
That's it, man. Michael Penix Jr. I just refuse to believe that there are 32 staffs, not individuals, 32 scouting staffs, general manager down, that there's 32 of them that believe Michael Penix is the sixth best quarterback in this draft. I do not believe that there's that believe Michael Penix Jr. is not one of the top three quarterbacks in this draft. So once you get beyond Jaden Daniels, I think Caleb Williams is a lock. I think Jaden Daniels, based on what he just did this year, it running and throwing the football, is a lock. And then when you get beyond that, I love Drake May. I do think he's a guy that's going to need some development. But you get into that Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix Jr., I think they're all in that conversation. And I think Michael Penix Jr. goes a lot earlier than people think.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at with it.
I'm trying to, like, I think four, at the very least four, maybe five. I think this is so, it's weird to be Penix. I don't agree. I don't understand it. I completely agree with you. I mean, there were times he was, for long stretches, the best quarterback that I've seen, that I saw in college last year. That includes Caleb. So I am, and he played the last couple of years through, all the way through, to kind of show you that the injuries are things that are potentially behind him. And he played, like, he ran the ball. He did, like, you're going to look at those playoff games against Texas and Michigan. He ran the football. So I'm really surprised that he is really getting held so hard because of those injuries. But like last year, I thought all four would go in the first round, and then Will Levis fell and fell and fell. Hell, I thought there was a chance the kid from Tennessee might get in the first round, Hendon Hooker. But they all fell lower and lower. So I don't think all six. I would say four. Four at the very least, but you just never know how these quarterback needy teams will get antsy. How they will get antsy and say, we gotta go get it.
The thing is, you can rattle off six teams that need a quarterback. And if you've got them.
Easy.
if you've got him slated as Michael Penix Jr. is your sixth best, and that sixth team rolls around, they'd be a fool not to pick him.
Because, like, if those three go early, which I think most people believe the top three will be Caleb Williams, Daniels, and then Drake May. And then if J.J. gets nabbed off early, let's say the Vikings go up and get him at, they say, here, we'll trade with the Chargers or somebody, and they go up and get him at five, and now four of them going off, like, you could see, oh, God, we're getting antsy. Oh, man, there's Bo Nix, there's Penix. Like, you could see the Raiders. You could see the Giants saying, we want to get back in to
Minnesota's
try to get him.
Still
you can see Denver. Denver, if Minnesota goes up and gets him, that would be their guy. But you could, the Raiders, you could see teams getting antsy, saying, like, we want to go make a move.
If you don't have your quarterback and you're drafting in the mid-teens to the 20s and Michael Penix Jr. on the board, you're a fool if you don't pick him.
Like, I think teams like the Saints, teams like that, you know, could say, we're going to sit and how much longer they're going to roll with guys like Derek Carr or something like that. All right, when we look at the draft from a Texans perspective, I think it's been interesting. It feels like my partner Clint Sterner has made a shift on what he thinks is the most important position of need right now for the Texans. We'll see how that factors in the draft coming up this weekend. That's next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hubley.
All right, some news coming with the Astros after they're swept in Chicago. Sources tell Chandler Rome of The Athletic that the Astros are optioning right-handed pitcher J.P. France to AAA Sugar Land ahead of the Mexico City trip that will clear a roster spot for Framber Valdez, but does prompt some questions about how their rotation lines up going forward. So, J.P. France is the odd man out. And, Clint, that is interesting because they looked at this thing and they could have gone J.P., they could have gone Hunter, but obviously we know a guy that I think the thought was maybe it's too early. This is earlier than we wanted to bring Spencer Arrigetti up, and it's really not going amazing. But he is the one, they choose him to stay in the rotation ahead of J.P. France, who you could argue, I don't even think there's an argument. But yeah, I guess Verlander came in the second half. But you could argue he was this team's best pitcher in the second half, best starter in the second half last year. And he is the one that goes down over Spencer Arrigetti and Hunter Brown, who is struggling as well. That's wow, where J.P. France is, where they are.
Yeah, look, I didn't they got to make Helfand has to make room for Javier too. They
got to say who's next. Is this Hunter and Spencer's going to battle this one out when Javier comes back?
Yeah, I mean, the one that's safe is old O'Neill, ain't he?
Nail's good.
He ain't going nowhere.
He ain't going nowhere at all.
He sure as hell better not.
I mean, at all.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's got to be Arrigetti, right?
No, I honest to God think it's whoever started pitch well. I think to the point you made earlier, they were very impressed how Arrigetti kind of pulled it together in his last start. I think it was similar fashion where he maybe gave up some early and was able to kind of at least give him a shot. I think last night, I know four runs in the first inning ain't great, but there is it. They held him down and he pitched much better and it at least gave him a shot.
If they make plays behind him.
Yeah.
If they make plays behind him, he doesn't give up four runs. He gives up one. He gets out of that jam. And so yeah, I mean, he definitely looked better and was swing and miss stuff, had several strikeouts. I mean, that was impressive, a lot more impressive than I think what the box score would tell you with Spencer Arrigetti yesterday. So we'll see. But J.P. France, hate to see that for the old Eiffel Tower, Tyler. I hate to see that, but I'm glad to be getting some arms back, brother.
We'll see what happens.
Wow. Damn, J.P., what in knee hell?
Yeah.
Maybe get himself going again down there.
You remember how horny we all were whenever J.P. France, Hunter Brown and company just came on the scene and looked great last season?
When they just kept bringing up these guys out of nowhere
yes.
we never heard
you remember
of
that?
Just lighting it up, yeah.
I mean,
it was like anytime anybody came up here last year or the last couple of years, they were inspired to do something.
I think I'm going to throw up, man.
I know you are. Sean Bajani's the one I'm worried about. Sean Bajani's that the ones who care a lot but keep it together the most, the real positive ones.
Oh, wow.
They're the ones. Like Joe Espada, we saw his ejection. I'm sure Joe's got a real pent-up game that will just let out crazy here soon. All right, the draft is tonight. The Texans are not drafting thus far in the first round. We'll see how the night goes. But, Clint, we've been talking about this since free agency, the positions and the positions of need, and I know you really think they got to fill defense at every single level, from defensive tackle to the linebacking core, to the second corner safety.
I hope this is a heavy defensive draft, Ron. I hope this is a heavy defensive draft.
Yeah, and you talked about that. It's funny now that we have been getting closer and closer to the draft and we've been having these conversations. It feels to me, to start, defensive tackle was the absolute number one priority for you, the thing that concerns you the most about this team. You even talked about there are ways that you can hide potentially a second corner in your coverages, what you do, yep, and especially how well you rush the passer. And the Texans look like they have an opportunity to be one of the best in the game at doing that. But he always said it's hard to hide a guy right up there up front. But the more we've talked over the last month, Clint, it feels like, to me, now you have shifted to corner, to that second corner being maybe the most important position for you. And that seems to be a shift from that defensive tackle.
Well, yeah, the game has changed, right? I mean, we're not talking about free agency where there's guys that you can go pay $15 or $20 million a year to and plug them in, and they are absolute game wreckers from the inside. I don't believe that with second round and third round draft picks that you're gonna find that type, that caliber player in the draft. So when I look at you know, the defensive tackle position, I was bullish on it, wanting a game changer, a game wrecker at the defensive tackle position. And you're not going to find that in the second round of the draft. You're not going to find that. Now, you may, and he may turn out to be 3 years from now, he may be that guy. But that's not the expectations that I have going to the draft for the Texans, is that in the second round, they're going to have the ability to get a player that's plug and play, and all of a sudden, this guy is a game changer type of player. I don't think you're going to find that in the second round. Now, if they trade back up into the first round to get one of these top three defensive tackles that may or may not fall, okay, that's different. But right now, sitting in the second round, and as it pertains to the draft, I just believe that the Texans, at the very least, need to get a player at one of the positions of need where you fill at least the void of depth. Like, if you get a second-round defensive tackle right now, I believe that guy is plug and play in a heavy rotation, and he's going to get a lot of snaps, and he's going to get a chance to develop naturally by being in there. And by midseason, you hope he's separated himself and he's become a starter, and he's going to exceed that second round caliber player. Same thing at linebacker, same thing at corner. Those are just the positions for me that I think in the second round, having that draft capital would best suit the Houston Texans. And I'd be honest with you, you would have to talk to me real long to get me to say the same thing about defensive end and safety as well. I just think this has to be a defense heavy top, at least top of the draft for the Houston Texans.
Yeah, I look at this and I think where they are and where they're drafting, I can see them being able to draft a player that by midseason is a player that is not just in your rotation, whether that is in corner or D tackle. Those are the two positions,
yep,
that feel like the big one. Even at linebacker too, you can throw that in too. That at the very least, by midseason, maybe week 10, 11, 12, whatever, around that time of the year, that they could be someone pushing for a starting job. They could be someone that you feel comfortable getting starting reps, those amount of reps, right? Like if you drafted a defensive tackle, especially one of these top ones where you're like, all right, even the kid out of Florida State, the big kid that's going in the second round,
Fisk.
Even a kid like that in the second round that you're seeing, there's a thought like maybe that is a guy that by week 10, by week 11,
yeah,
that could be pushing guys like, you know, Tim Settle or Foley into getting
started. He better be.
You know what I mean?
If
you can, and I can see that in a cornerback spot, any of those corners in that second, that first, late first to second round, that they could get through and be pushing the Okudas, the Hendersons, if they're still there, you know,
right,
pushing them as starting caliber guys. So I don't think right off the bat those are guys that would be able to do that. In the same thing in the linebacker spot too, right off the bat. But hopefully mid-season wise, like they're ready to at least be that type of an impact player.
Yeah, look, I mean, you look at Jalen Petrie. He out of the gate was an impact player and then slowed down in the second season. Yeah. You know, he was a second round guy. You look at Nico Collins, he was a third round guy. It took 2 years for him to really find his groove, even though I believe that with this coaching staff, he would have found his groove a lot earlier. You look at Tank Dell, third rounder, found his groove. You know, I don't know that Juice Scruggs, second rounder last year, would have started the year. I don't know if he would have been a starter. He was competing, I believe, for the starting center position in training camp. I would assume that he would. But, you know, things, guys like that, like this team I don't believe is in the same spot where they're drafting the Tanks, the Juice Scruggs, the Nikos, and those guys are immediately going to get opportunities. So you're in a spot where you don't necessarily need the draft to go play a game tomorrow, but you've got two premium draft picks in the second round and one in the third, really, but we'll talk just about the second rounders. Drafting guys that are good, solid depth, so you don't have to go out there and manufacture reps for them. You don't have to try your damnedest to create the game-like atmosphere in training camp or in practice to get reps out of them and develop them. No, you throw them. They're second-round picks, man. You throw them to the Wolves, and you control how many snaps they get in a game, and you, to a certain degree, can control the situation that they're in, and you let them develop naturally as they help your team win ball games. And you talk about like the Fisk kid out of Florida State. I mean, the key is bringing one or two of those guys in that have a little different gear than all the journeymen that you brought in at D tackle.
Yes, yes.
You know,
somebody, yeah.
That's an ascending player, right? And if you look, it's a roll of the dice. But if you hit on them, to your point, by mid-year, they could potentially be wrecking shop, earning more reps. Boom, and now you hit a grand slam with that in the second round with one of those picks. So, I just want it to be one of those guys. I think it's a pipe dream to think that they're going to draft guys in the second round that are just going to be plug and play difference makers, right? Because we saw CJ and Will and even Tank and all that. Like, the team is constructed different right now. The team is built different right now to where, hell, as a fan, I don't want that to be possible. I don't want it to be possible.
Yeah. All right, coming up, as we'll finish a little bit more on the draft, that's coming up as well. But I think we're starting to see potentially in a season of many issues for the Astros, we may be seeing maybe what the number one central issue is. We'll discuss that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Favorite, one of my favorite moments. What we're going to be talking about tomorrow? Who is going to be the person that really sticks out with their outfits tonight? Who is going to bring it tonight?
We've already seen a couple. We've seen Caleb Williams. We've seen
he's got a little navy blue number
with some, looks like some crosses coming out of the pocket. Looks like some, it's not a pocket square. It looks like they're designed. They're on the jacket.
Oh, designed on the jacket.
Not real flashy. That's not going to win any awards. We saw Jaden Daniels.
Somebody's got to bring it.
I don't know, man. I mean, those two aren't the two, to be honest with you. I thought Daniels from LSU
might,
and I don't, from Arizona, like
Marvin
State,
ain't going to do nothing. Marvin Harrison ain't going to do nothing.
I feel like I've seen him G'd up before. It's the ankle showing and the clean shoes. Where did I see him at?
Don't stop.
It was the awards, the college awards show. Yeah, I don't know.
And go, you know, think we gonna get any Pepto-Bismol suits like Kyler Murray gave us?
I would imagine somebody's gonna
come on, give us something to roll with.
Yeah. Michael Penix Jr. If he does get drafted in the first round, he's been known to have some clean gear.
Well, I'm trying to figure out who all showed. We'll see how many guys are actually there.
See, I'm not familiar with.
I think it's like 12.
Like Dallas Turner, right here. This kid is the best edge player, best defensive player. In a lot of on a lot of people's boards or on hell on damn near every board out of Alabama defensive end, I don't know what his gear game's gonna be like.
Yeah, we'll see. I have no idea. Somebody stands out. Somebody's gonna
well, hell, I mean, Ron, it's offensive tackle heavy, man. Old tackle, big boys are showing out, man.
That's what I'm seeing. Yeah, big boys. Yeah, I'm waiting. Yeah, I like the big fellas. They come through and they wear stuff. That's so tight. You wonder, man, how big is that guy?
Right.
How big is that guy? I was hoping Trevon Jay Sweat would be there. I don't care where he gets drafted. I want to see his gear.
What damn Byron Murphy's a bad man, ain't he?
Big fella, be like, wouldn't you? Like to get your hands on him. All right, draft big night coming up. Remember, right behind us, NFL draft coverage. The fellas will have that for you. That'll roll through this evening as well. Tyler, do we have Area 45 tonight, or is it just straight
no
up?
No Area draft? 45. Yeah,
straight up NFL draft tonight. All right, yeah. I saw PC around here. I wouldn't show.
He's sailing.
NFL draft round one. We'll have that all for you tonight right here on Sports Radio 610. And we'll be out tomorrow at the Texans party. We'll be kicking the thing off. We'll be there early before gets started tomorrow.
That's right. Who's all invited to that? Everybody, anybody? Is that anybody? Everybody coming to the party?
I would imagine
Tyler?
It's been. I imagine it's very similar to.
Yeah, it's wide open.
It's to the previous year. So,
well,
yeah.
Come hang with us then, man.
Yeah, come have a good time.
I knew we were going to be at the party. I didn't know it was wide open.
That Big Nick energy.
Yeah. I got a feeling you're going to get. Well, the Astros been on your ass about what you do. Now you're going to get to.
Well, the Astros just need to worry about not sucking ass on the baseball
great
diamond.
Great point.
He's waiting on that one.
Not my tweets.
He's waiting on that one. NFL Sons draft coverage coming up next. All right, the Astros, if you missed it, J.P. France, he is going to be optioned down to AAA Sugar Land as they make room for Framber Valdez. So he is the odd man out. And, Clint, they lost again today. Mm-hmm. 7-19 7-19 now. Brian Abreu gives up a 2-run homer when he comes in to try to clean things up. They lose. Verlander started. He gets into the fifth inning. He was in trouble all game long. Was able to get out of it, but they were able to continue to clean up the jams as Abreu eventually gave up a 2-run bomb as the Cubs sweep this series. And I think the big conversation piece right now is. Joe Espada gets ejected, and I think a lot of people are looking at this like, what the hell was that? That ejection seemed like it was the most polite ejection I have ever seen in my life, Clint. And I think overall, I'm not saying that alone builds this thought to me, but Clint, I don't think the players, and these are a lot of players who have a ton of experience. I don't think that they are really confident that they have the people in place to figure out the answers that they're going to need. You have made reference to seeing Ryan Pressly and how he was with the pitching coach that came out to talk to him. Didn't seem like there was a lot of confidence in what was going to be said there. And Joe Espada is just not bringing a ton of confidence, I don't think. I think the players inside question if they have the people there that are putting them in the best place to win games. I think that is, at the very least, a question right now, if full-fledged a belief.
Absolutely. Look, I don't want to take away from the fact that this team, the players, are not performing at an acceptable level. It's bad. It's really bad. It's unacceptable. But through this adversity, I think one of several things that has come to light is there is a serious void of leadership. And I think the one thing that's been most obvious when you start talking about leadership is the manager, Joe Espada, appears to be incapable of moving the needle with this team. Whether you're talking about the comments that he makes after guys are struggling at the plate, after guys struggle at the on the mound. You talk about the inability to go out there and at least try to light a fire under your ass with getting ejected from the game. It was the most polite conversation I've ever seen an individual have. It was the most casual ejection, and it was the most casual walk back to the dugout afterwards. To me, that's that piece is the biggest concern or the biggest thing that I draw from this 7-19 start with the Astros is clearly there's a lack of leadership across the board.
Yep.
Your better players, Altuve, Yordan Alvarez, Bregman, Kyle Tucker, clearly those guys are not the leaders that Carlos Correa was, that Springer was, that Maldonado was. And clearly when you look at, I think the most obvious is it appears that Joe Espada is in over his head. It appears that he is from a managerial standpoint, doesn't have the ability to be a difference maker as you manage through adversity the way that Dusty Baker and A.J. Hinch appeared to be able to do. So, Ron, your overall point of it seems like maybe the team doesn't believe in the decision makers. I don't know if this team is there yet, but I know it's a legit possibility.
This is today did not help. That did not help because
you're talking about the ejection.
The ejection,
the casual, the polite ejection.
All of that, like you said it, there are, I'm not saying he is. There are moments that he resembles and it looks like Steven Silas.
Oh, agreed, 100%.
There are moments
the when post-game, looks, the way in the tone and the way in which he communicates is very
like
Silas.
That and or in over his head and like the Cully feel like it's
a great comp of Silas,
it,
honestly.
It feels like with Cully, like I don't even put Lovey into this. I think a game just maybe passed him, but guys like Cully and Silas,
football playing Jesse,
they just don't like they've been assistants their whole lives, and they feel
they
like
should be.
They should be assistants.
Yeah,
and that's what Joe Espada feels like 25 days into April. You know, the first part of this season, he feels like he is an assistant that they have given the keys to. But the worst part about it compared to Silas and Cully is, those cats didn't have talent and expectations.
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah.
This was supposed to be, I was told repeatedly last year, anybody could manage this team to a World Series. They're winning in spite of the manager. And they brought this cat over with expectations. Yeah. And they've brought an assistant. And yesterday, Tony said, the place where you really see a manager is when things start to hit the fan and things start to go left, those guys have a common force and a level of confidence that the team feels like it's going to be all right. And that we're not seeing that.
Yeah, it's a perfect storm with Joe Espada. And I know for me personally, I was high on Joe Espada being the manager. I did not think that they would be entertaining or interviewing a guy that would be in over his head so early on, or appear to be in over his head so early on. Nor, because to me, like, yes, Joe Espada appears to be in over his head. He appears to not be able to handle the adversity of this season so far. He just doesn't handle it, doesn't navigate it well, doesn't communicate it well, doesn't. I would like for my manager to exude confidence. He doesn't.
No.
But I would also say that I never in my wildest dreams thought that this team like required a Dusty Baker level glue guy, if you will, to play good baseball. Like I thought this team with Jose Altuve, even Abreu, Bregman, Tucker, you know, like Yordan to a certain extent. I know he's young, but Fromber, I mean, these guys are growing up. Like I expected this team to be able to play good baseball.
They are to
right the ship.
And they panicked.
Clearly, yes.
They have panicked and panicked really early. Panic, and they are pressing. Clearly, you can see all the way through. And with their pressing, the manager's making moves like he's pressing. Tomorrow, like coming up on Friday, right now, do you think Alex Bregman has pure confidence to know where he's going to bat Friday?
I don't know why he would.
He needs to be in a five hole.
That would be another new spot. That would be the fourth place he's bat. If he was in the five hole, that'd be the fourth place he's hit since Friday.
Is Braggy being ridiculous?
Not to say that Alex Bregman has done anything to make you say, hey, security, put you wherever you should know where you're coming in. But damn, boy, it's getting rough. They're getting close to hitting the rock bottom. Boy, if they get swept by the damn Rockies, that's
I think Tyler said it best. They go south of the border, and that might be rock bottom. We'll see what happens.
Framber's pitching.
And if that's the case, we got to hold a funeral for this golden era.
No, we got it.
It's a proper way to send it off. What we do on this show, we have funerals.
Friday before May 1st, you think? All right, Clint, great job. Tyler, great job as well. Stay tuned for NFL draft coverage coming up right behind us. I am Ron Hughley, as always, Houston. We love you, baby. He goes by G-Wa? Yeah. No, he does.
Yes, he does.
G-Wa?
What up, G-Wa?
No, you're lying.
It's not that bad.
No, it is. I can look stupid by myself. He has never, no one has ever said, yo, G-Wa!
Always seems to know the way.